The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me are certified financial planners Cameron Utley and Spencer Hager. First of all, hello. Nice to be with you today.
Likewise.
We're going to hit it hard. I'm trying to get really excited about this topic as an every person, but there's some of it I want to learn about and some of it that's way over my head, so we're going to get into it.
It's going to go 45 minutes. It's going to be great.
Yeah, we'll see. Mastering RMDs. What is an RMD, they say? Required minimum distributions, right? Tax smart strategies for retirement and legacy planning. This was a behemoth, writing down the kind of questions I want to ask you guys. And it's that time of the year. It's the end of the year. The only reason I know this is we're kind of in the middle of it ourselves with a beneficiary IRA. So part of this is going to be really interesting to better understand from my perspective. So if you are a person who's on deck to take your required minimum distribution, there's a lot to understand and there's some mistakes that you can make. So want to get into it. Let's first tell people what it is. How it works, what kind of tools that they might have, where it applies to, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, I suppose we could take them one by one. What it is, so you said it required minimum distribution, which pretty much just means once you hit a certain age, if you have pre-tax retirement accounts, which again could be a 401k, a 403b, pretty much the same thing, a traditional IRA, something like that, anything that you put in money, got a tax break for. That's pre-tax. So once you hit a certain age, currently it's 73. If you're just now reaching the age where you have to start taking money out, it's dictated by the IRS. So, depending on how big of your balance is, that's going to be what dictates the amount you have to take out every year. And
it's a have to.
Yes, unfortunately.
It's not something you can sit and write out. You have to do it.
If you think about it, like your whole working career, you've been putting money away. And if you're in this boat, you were getting a tax deduction for those contributions. At a certain point, the IRS is now just saying, time's time to start paying your taxes.
Like it or not.
Yeah, Uncle Sam's got to get his. Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I kind of want to start with the 73, and my first question is, what do we need to know about taking withdrawals after 73, or I guess at 73 and beyond?
So it depends on when you turn 73 in the year, but I usually tell people if you're turning 73, doesn't really matter when that year, you should probably take it. Technically, if you turn 73 in the first half of that year, you should definitely take it. If you turn 73 in the second half of the year, in theory, you could defer to the next year, but then you still have to take a second one next year. So you're pretty much doubling up. So in theory, there could be a reason to defer if you have some other tax planning strategy you're trying to put in where you get some benefit to do it. But if it's just status quo years, you could technically defer it, but you got to take it next year.
So you can take it any time of the year of your birth year.
When you turn 73, correct.
So, for me, my birthday's in December. Do I have to wait until December to start taking them?
No. If you know it's coming and you're planning to take it that year, just take it out any time that year to satisfy
it. It's just the first year where it can get a little messy. Every year after that, they just basically say, this year you turn 74, 75, whatever. And say during that year, 2025, for example, you just have to take out X amount of dollars before the end of the year.
Did you want to say something?
No, I was just going to say, yeah, but if to your point, you don't have to wait until you've officially turned 73 to take it to answer your question. Hopefully that makes sense.
It doesn't. Actually seems dumb. You're either 73 or you're not. So if the rule is that you have to take it at 73, why not?
I believe it's phrased of in the year that you turn 73.
Okay.
But again, the first year is...
First year you can technically kick it, but most people don't do it.
Can you decide how much you want to take out?
No.
Or do
no.
they calculate it for you?
They calculate it for you. There's a table you can look up. It's a multiple. So, again, it's technically based on the value in those pre-tax accounts December 31st the year before. Okay, so if we're talking about taking an RMD in 2024, you're basing it off of December 31st, 2023's value, mm-hmm. and then you divide it by a multiple, which is by your age. So that multiple, the amount you need to take out gets bigger and bigger the older you get.
Just remember, it's not required maximum distribution. It's the minimum. So you, if they tell you you have to take out $20,000, you want to take $25,000 out.
Okay. You're you just have to start with the basic minimum amount. Yep. Okay. Yep. That's good to know. Basics. I know you talked about calculation and managing the distributions. Is there a website or someplace we can send people for them to calculate, estimate their calculate their distributions, or does that have to be with the institution that they're working with?
There's probably – you could do it on the IRS, I'm sure, but you any institution you're with should tell you what the amount is. I don't know one that I've ever dealt with that they don't say, this is your RMD, and most of them will let you set it up to where if you have an RMD – like one I know is Ohio Deferred Comp. They'll just, if you don't satisfy it by, I think, like September or somewhere in that time frame, in the end of the year, they'll just do it for you and send you the money.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is auto deposit a good idea in this situation? Or deposit withdrawal? What's the language?
Auto withdrawal would be right.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
I've never seen any instances where you can just have it all completely automated. I think it's just because the number changes every year. You'd have to go in and make the edits to, you know, make sure you're taking the right amount out, because it's going to, because the way they have set it up, the amount every year becomes a bigger fraction of your account. So you take more and more money out every year.
See, I don't want to jump ahead too far. We'll get there. But I'm empathizing here. I'm sitting here thinking we're in year 7 of a 10-year beneficiary IRA, and they convinced us, I won't say who they are, but they convinced us to auto manage, and I told my husband
just
to
say just say who it was.
Michael's got a bleep button now.
Nope. But I told my husband just yesterday, I said, you know, pop in there and find out, because there's a substantial amount left, and we've only got 3 years to take that money out of the tool, so it can't be the same amount as it was last year. I would assume they're taking care of that, but I don't want to assume. I want to make sure that we don't run into sort of a penalty if it's not managed properly.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, that's kind of where it goes back to. There is a decent amount of tax planning that goes around with that. I know we're going to talk about more of that, mm-hmm. but it really is usually whenever I'm dealing with people that have to take RMDs, or if it's a beneficiary RMD, you try and line it up with any – if you know income's high now, like try and space it, and then if you think there's a chance it falls off, if it's going to be consistent forever, then maybe you take the same amount every year. But – you know, you can get creative with it, because you can try and balance it where you're paying less in taxes on the distributions. But again, that's looking at the rest of your income, what's your tax situation, and then, you know, planning accordingly.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay. Speaking of RMDs and taxes, how do people minimize the tax bite on that income? I mean, you know, I've heard where somebody will take their RMD and they'll put it into their cash flow to pay bills, and some people will reinvest it. Is there a perfect scenario, or is that literally depends on the person?
Don't say depends, Cameron.
Depends.
You go ahead.
Not to be the pessimist, but if when you're talking about RMD planning, ideally you're not starting RMD planning when you're taking RMDs. It's something where while you're still working, or when you just start retirement but not required to take anything out, if, you know, working with, you know, a financial planner, your accountant, you can kind of really strategize moving money over to Roth money. I think we've talked about that on the podcast before, where Roth money isn't taxed, or it grows tax-free and comes out tax-free. Mm-hmm. And you can pay taxes today on your pre-tax money and put it in the Roth funds. And then the other benefit to Roth is there's no RMDs with Roth money.
Wait a minute. So you're paying taxes when you take the distribution, and you're paying taxes a second time when you're putting it into your Roth?
So you're only paying taxes once. Okay. You got the deduction when you put the money in, pre-tax. When you retired, let's say you just converted it from pre-tax to Roth, that's when you pay tax.
Okay.
And then you never pay tax again.
What about in the case of a Beni IRA? So we're paying taxes on that amount. So every year we're like, well, what do we do with this? What's the best way to manage this money? If we put it in a retirement tool, we're going to pay taxes on it a second time.
you got a lot less flexibility with the beneficiary, yeah. right? Because you're on that 10-year time frame. Part of it now, there's more clarity coming out, but part of it too depends on the person who passed that you inherited the money from. Were they taking RMDs before? Because if they were, again, check this with your accountant, but you should start taking it first year. And before there was some ambiguity to say, well, if they weren't taking their RMD before they passed, do you have to take one every year? Or could you, in theory, wait until year 10 and just take the whole thing? Which, again, if in 10 years from when you inherit it, you think you're going to be retired and income is going to be really low, like maybe you just defer. But mm-hmm. a lot less flexibility. And I think what Cameron was getting at was essentially saying, like, well, you could run into a situation, this is pretty common, and you can probably find a billion blog posts this online. If you, like, you put everything into your retirement accounts pre-tax and you just don't plan ahead thinking about the RMDs because you just want all the pre-tax today, you could hit this hypothetical point in time, and we've for sure seen it, your RMD at 73 is $400,000 and you only need $200,000 to live on and you have no flexibility now. You kind of are limited. You can do a couple creative things to limit the tax bill, whereas if you start doing like Roth conversions earlier on, you could have more future flexibility just to eat some taxes today.
Yeah. Once I think RMD planning, we'll use not beneficiary RMDs, but mm-hmm. It doesn't really matter at this point. But if you are in the phase where you're taking RMDs, your options are pretty limited to keeping it in cash and spending the money or reinvesting it in a brokerage account mm-hmm. or some other, you know, CDs or other investment vehicle. You can't convert it to a Roth IRA. You can't put it back into a normal IRA. So your options are a lot more limited once you actually start taking the distributions.
What about gifting?
I was going to say, that's qualified charitable distribution. So you should consider that if you're taking the RMD. Well, it's weird, actually. The RMD age used to be 70 and a half. And so technically, you can start gifting from an IRA that you're going to have to take an RMD from. You can start doing it when you're 70 and a half as opposed to waiting until 73. Now, you don't have to do that, but you still get a nice tax benefit. The benefit is you never pay taxes on the money you put into the IRA or 401k. And then by gifting it to charity, you don't pay tax on whatever you give. If you do it in the year of having an RMD, it offsets what you have to take out. So if your RMD is 25 grand and you give 5 grand to charity, you only pay taxes on 20 that mm-hmm. you have to take out. So if you're giving to charity already and that's a goal of yours that you like to do, for sure do it. But
what about family? I mean, that's a tax-free event, isn't it?
No, I wish.
Well, tax-free from
the gifting
from the gifting event, but mm-hmm. You still have to take the RMD and pay the taxes on
it. Right,
that.
Yeah. Right. But I mean, you're only paying taxes on it once. Like, they don't have to pay taxes on it.
Correct. Yeah, that's more of an estate plan tool, which I think.
And what's the max gift you can give somebody?
18 per year.
And that changes annually.
Yep. So, help me understand. Is there? I guess people just need to talk to their accountants. We're not CPAs, but we do a lot of work with CPAs. But I guess the best advice is to have people really have conversations with their CPAs about the RMD long before they turn 73. I guarantee nobody's doing that. It would never occur to me at 35 or 40 or 50 or even 60 to have a conversation with my my accountant about my RMDs when I turn 73.
Yeah, and they're probably not bringing it up either. I mean, it depends how granular you want to get. I mean, again, we always say this, like, ideally you have some advisors that are putting in the time to do it for you. In theory, you could do it on your own, right? I mean, you could run some, dare I say, time value of money calculations, right? You could play it out, like, what's my hypothetical retirement account going to be worth by the time I turn 73? And then you can look up the IRS timetable and say, what am I going to have to take out? And then look at your budget and apply it. Like, you're right, it's crazy. Your head starts to spin. So you could do it yourself, but yeah, ideally you have a financial planner and a CPA and you can start planning ahead. Or if you're not going to do that and you really want to get granular to get ahead of it, you really have to look at what you're spending, what you think you're going to spend in retirement, what you're going to have saved up, and then go from there.
But it seems like there's quite a bit of limitation as to how to avoid being pushed into a higher tax bracket.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing you have to be careful with, too, with the RMDs and trying to get creative, if you are in retirement, you have to worry about, like, Medicare and IRMA, which mm-hmm. is essentially – it's an acronym, but essentially it's if you make too much – you know, the more money you make, potentially more you're going to have to pay in premium for Medicare effectively just because you made more. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to say it's a penalty, but it's like it's a progressive tax on your Medicare premium. So, again, you have to be careful with that, too, with RMDs, because you – not only will it – you get hit with higher taxes, you could have to pay a good chunk more in Medicare premiums just because you have a massive RMD.
And that one's usually a unpleasant surprise because the big point with that one is they look 2 years behind at your income. So you take the RMD, that, you know, high RMD 1 year, you don't really think about it. And then 2 years later, you're like, well, my Medicare premium, I just got a bill in the mail for, I have to, you know, owe $100 more per month. That's not a letter anyone loves to get,
right.
I'm sure.
Right. What about, I mean, I've got some friends that are teachers and firemen and police officers. Do they have the same kind of, you know, I think, what is it, STIRS, OPERS, STIRS, SIRS?
OP&F, if you're police and fire.
Yeah. Yeah. Are those kinds of retirement tools, or do you manage distributions the same way? Are they required to take distributions out of those accounts?
So it depends. I hate that word too, but I'm going to explain what I mean when I say depends. Uh-huh. So it doesn't count. Yeah, so it depends if you take the stream of income, right? With those pension systems, generally you have the option to either take a stream of income, so you reach, you know, 20, 30 years of service, you retire, and then they say you can take a lump sum benefit, we'll pay out your entire pension. Now you manage it on your own, right? If they do that, you're probably going to put it into an IRA, in which case you have to take RMDs, right?
Like everybody else.
Right. Mm-hmm. Or you can do like a partial where you do a little bit of both. You take a partial lump sum payout, but you still have a pension stream every year, or you take the full pension stream. If you're taking the full stream, right, yeah, it is what it is. They're paying you that no matter what. That's what you're living off of probably. But you, it's not an RMD. It's just they're paying you the pension.
You're not required like you would be a non-civil service employee to take a certain amount. You can choose the amount you want to take. Is that how that works?
Well, no, it's, you know, here's the pension stream we're going to give you. And
so they decide.
Yeah, right. And that's where, again,
just like Social Security, you don't get to choose how much they pay you. Okay. They just tell you.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've never had someone be offered like $90,000 for a pension stream and say like, actually, I'll take the $70,000 option. But yeah, I suppose you could get creative with it. But no, it's just it is what it is.
Do those kinds of jobs have those kinds of retirement tools, do they have reps, liaisons that they have to work with to manage these things? Or does it fall under sort of the CFP?
Usually there might be a individual that helps you when you're making
like HR.
When you're making the shift from retirement and making all these elections. But then at that point, if you don't have a financial planner in your corner, it's usually on your own.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, they'll definitely have someone who can sit down with you. I just don't know how granular they're going to get other than explaining, here are your options, and then speak with your professionals to help decide what's the best for you.
So it's still a good idea for those folks to have a team like a CFP, a CPA.
I mean, yeah. We're biased, right? But
I don't think they're going to give you – I don't think the HR benefit elections is going to recommend which option to pick. They're just going to give you the options.
Yeah, exactly. They wouldn't touch that one. Okay. How do people coordinate the income streams and Social Security with these RMDs? Is there a systematic approach to that, or does it matter what – you know, how many retirement tools you have, what's on the radar there? I mean, how should they be timed, I guess, to work alongside Social Security and other income streams is probably a better way to ask that question.
You want to hit that first? You want me to?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. yeah, I mean, we already touched on the tax piece, so I'll take the other angle. I'd say coordinate from a cash flow piece, because again, if you've got a good chunk coming in from Social Security, maybe you've got a pension on top of that, and you don't need the RMDs, that kind of goes back to initially, like, do you auto-distribute it? And do you take it to cash versus keep it invested? If your lifestyle is completely covered by Social Security and pension, then I'd teach their own, but I would think you could keep the money invested at that point. So then you probably should just auto-distribute it, put it into some other investment account that won't be an IRA, and just, you know, let it keep working for you.
What, such as? Like a CD or something?
It's called like a non-qualified brokerage account, which means there's no tax benefit other than it's just better than cash. So that's, to me, how you'd coordinate it. So just, you know, do the math. Do you need the RMD to live off of? If so, the full thing or a portion of it, and then, you know, use that to then dictate when you should take the money out. Do you keep it invested or not? That's how I view lining them all up.
Do the same institutions offer those kind of tools?
What do you mean?
If you're working with, I don't know, I'll say Vanguard. We work with Vanguard. So if you're working with Vanguard and you've got a 401k and you've got to take your RMDs and you don't really need them, do you go to Vanguard to say, I want to put this into another retirement tool?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. Again, like if you have a designated advisor, they should be able to help you with all that. But if you know what you're talking about and go to Vanguard or whoever it is, they'll point you in the right direction. Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
I think the other angle I was thinking of coordinating benefits is if you're married and you each have an IRA, so that's two IRAs, and then you have two 401ks, you have a required distribution from all four of those accounts.
So, I never thought about that.
So just thinking about that, you want to make sure you know every account that you have to take your required distribution from. And there's rules in there where you don't have to take four distributions. You can take the full, if you add up all the amounts you're required to take, you could theoretically just take it out of one account. And that would satisfy.
From the tax perspective.
Yeah, and it's called satisfying your distribution. But at the same time, you could just take four different distributions if that makes it. Gives you more peace of mind that you took the right number out too.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I never even thought about that.
Yeah, my only other advice out there would be just if you're not working with someone, familiarize yourself with how those different benefits are taxed and how the taxes work. I don't want that to sound condescending, but I've seen a lot of misleading articles or podcasts, things out there where people are pretty much like trying to scare the crap out of people, saying like, oh my gosh, if you have this RMD, then they call it like a domino effect and you're just getting killed with taxes. Some of that can be true, but I think it's misleading people who don't understand how all those different things get taxed.
Which is 90% of us.
100%, right? Yeah. And I don't besmirch people for that, but just try and get a grip on it if you're not going to work with some advisors who can help explain it to you.
Don't get your financial advice from TikTok.
Hey, you said it, not me. I didn't say anything.
Not all of your financial
that's
advice.
That's from Tracy. Okay. Inherited
Reddit,
IRAs.
Yeah, Reddit
is,
only. Reddit
yeah,
only.
Right. Yeah. Inherited IRAs. This is... in addition to the other things that we talked about, what should people focus on, beneficiaries focus on when it comes to the 10-year rule? Besides, obviously, you got to take it all within 10 years or you'll have a penalty, right?
If you're not a spouse.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a key one.
I'm glad you said that.
If you are a spouse, then you generally just get to, and I know the rules have been, it feels like the rules have changed.
Well, I'm sorry. I got to interrupt you. Yeah. So married couple, husband has a Roth IRA.
Yep.
So if it's bennied over to beneficiaried over to the spouse,
it's not
considered a beneficiary IRA, right? It's
correct.
Considered an IRA that's beneficiaried over to the spouse.
Correct. And it's just treated as if it's now her IRA.
So aren't all beneficiary IRAs beneficiary to non-spouses in the first place? Are there any situations where a Benny IRA would be handled by a spouse?
I think you're right. I think you're like step three. Like you've inherited an IRA and then you've already gone through the process of submitting the death certificate for the person who passed and they've transferred ownership. Like Cameron was saying, like the second they die, it's technically an inherited IRA for anyone. But then if you're a spouse, by the time you've transferred ownership, it's not an inherited anymore. So that's what you were saying.
There's some weird nuances in there too. Like I think if you're a minor child, it's not considered a beneficiary IRA until you become the age of majority. There's some weird ones in there, but generally if you're not a spouse.
Yeah. So no, I think we kind of hit on, I would say the only thing is know your income source because it depends on when in life you inherit it and what your income situation is. Was the decedent taking money before? Because again, that dictates how strict you have to be with the timeline on taking the RMDs. And really that's it. I'd say just try and time it out if you can to pay as little in tax as possible based on income and know if you have to start taking it year one versus, hey, I've got flexibility. I can wait until year eight to start really turbocharging the distributions.
Okay. I'm a petri dish here for you. Explain to me why in the world.
This feels personal. No,
Cameron's laughing at me. Why in the world if my parent, if my husband's parent, if we have a beneficiary IRA from my mother-in-law,
mm-hmm.
and there are multiple siblings, and the eldest sibling is 73, that dictates that we have to start taking distributions right away because the oldest sibling is 73 years old.
Yeah, that wouldn't be the case. I'm not. So yeah, essentially,
it's all based off the parent.
Yeah, it's who passed. So and again, like
so, it's nothing to do with the offspring. It's everything to do with
the person who passed. Yeah, and if it's a situation where you've got parent passed and they've got four kids and they've got a 25 apiece, each one of those kids is going to get their own IRA beneficiary IRA. That's an offshoot of that 25%. And then each person's on their own for taking the RMDs. And if your oldest sibling doesn't take it because they forgot or just weren't, it wasn't on the radar, you're not going to be penalized for their move. So no, nothing to do with the oldest, just
okay.
Two passed.
Okay. Good to know. 10-year rule. Did we cover everything we need to cover as far as what's the ramification if somebody doesn't take their?
I think so. I think the only, I don't know if we said it explicitly, the 10-year rule applies to traditional or Roth. So keeping it on your radar too, less about lining up the income at that point. But if you have a Roth IRA, even though if it's your IRA, if it's a Roth inherited IRA, you still have to take it out in 10 years.
Does the 10-year rule only apply to beneficiary IRAs?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Non-spousal
yeah. beneficiary IRAs. You have 10 years to take the money. And what happens if you don't?
Oh, just your point. If you don't take any RMD, the IRS comes back. They've gotten a little nicer than they had in the past couple of years, but it used to be 50%. They'd give you a 50% penalty on whatever was meant to be taken out. Now it's only 25%. And I think that even gets waived if you make the correction within the first 6 months after the new year.
That takes your breath away, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It's painful.
Ooh. Okay, so we kind of got into this in this conversation, but how do you leave a legacy using your RMDs and fit that into your estate planning goals?
I'm sure we could go a couple different ways with this. I would say from the standpoint that I'm thinking of, there's a couple different routes we could go with this. But if it depends, like if you just if you want to keep it all and live off of it as best you can because you're not sure if you're going to have money left over, then it's just the estate plan from the standpoint of it's going to flow through your estate plan. It'll go to your heirs or charity or whoever it's going to be.
Provided you have an estate plan.
Correct, yeah, which hopefully you do. So at that point, it's like that's pretty straightforward. If there are plenty of people who want to gift while they're living, so they don't want to your earlier point about gifting to family, if you want to give some ahead while you're living so you get to see the people that are set to inherit your money, you know, enjoy it, be able to utilize it, that's pretty common, then – right, take the RMDs to cash and then gift it, and then that goes back to be cognizant of how much you're gifting. That's what I think of. So just do you want to gift it while you're living? Can you afford to do that versus wait until the end and then they inherit a big IRA that they have to take out in 10 years?
Okay. I want to run through some dumb mistakes to avoid. So what comes to mind when I say what are some dumb things you can do with an RMD or not do?
Not take it is one.
Let's see.
I have some on a list if it helps too.
I was gonna say probably taking the wrong amount, not knowing, or what I brought that up earlier, but not taking every RMD if you have multiple accounts out there.
Yep.
Yeah, and then I don't know if you're giving a lot to I don't want to say you're dumb for not doing this, but if you give a lot to charity or anything to charity and you're cashing it out, paying the taxes, and then gifting to charity with the after tax money. Again, I wouldn't say, you know, dumb, but you could have been more efficient with gifting to charity. So, again, keep that on the radar.
Okay.
I think those are the main ones.
So, yeah. I have a few.
Oh.
So, forgetting to include inherited IRAs.
Yeah,
fair point. We just talked about that. All neglecting spousal options. Is that beneficiary assignments? Surviving spouses often fail to consider advantageous spousal rollover rules or whether to treat an inherited IRA as their own.
Yeah, I think that's what you were saying about, in theory, every inherited IRA should be non-spousal when it's all done. So, yeah, if you just don't understand the rules is what that sounds like.
I think what's kind of going into it, I think if you're a spouse and you inherit an IRA and that deceased spouse hadn't yet start taking their RMDs and you're under the RMD age, you can make it yours and not and essentially kick the can down the road of when that starts.
Okay. Poor timing of withdrawals. We already talked about that. Incorrect tax withholding. Talked about that. Overlooking charitable giving opportunities. Talked about that. You guys are on it. Not considering Roth conversion opportunities. Some retirees miss the chance to reduce future RMDs by converting IRA funds to a Roth before RMDs begin.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key. So you can't do the convert. You can't do a Roth conversion for an RMD, but you can do them to avoid future or reduce future RMDs.
So how early can you do that? Anytime? Mm-hmm. So that's a investment strategy for retirement, right?
It is. Yeah. Just be cognizant because sometimes it can be counterproductive. Don't just do them, but it could be helpful.
Talk to your professional.
Yep.
Well said.
Failing to plan for surviving spouses or heirs, not integrating RMDs into estate planning. can lead to higher tax pay higher taxes for heirs, especially when large IRAs are involved, and overlooking impact on Medicare premiums.
Yep.
So RMDs can increase the modified adjusted gross income resulting in higher Medicare Part B or Part D premiums due to income-related monthly adjustment amounts. That just blows my mind right there. Explain that one a little bit.
That's what we were saying earlier. That's the whole IRMA that I was referencing, mm-hmm. where it's pretty much – that's an acronym for saying if your income – it's they have income bands for it. And so if – you know, ideally you want to be in the lowest one possible, so your Medicare Part B premium is going to be the cheapest they can be. If you jump up because of large RMDs, there are several brackets and you could pay a lot more in Medicare premiums effectively just because you make more money. It's like a, like I said earlier, it's like a progressive tax system for your Medicare premiums.
Okay.
And it's not just we probably could do a whole podcast episode on that. I mean, there's other events besides RMDs that could trigger, you know, a large gain on a sale of a house, other investment sales. Like mm-hmm. that's definitely one to always keep in mind once you are on Medicare.
Okay. Great. We're gonna keep doing our level best to get you excited about financial planning. This has been fun. Thanks very much, guys. We hope you'll tune in for the next episode, and we appreciate your time today.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.